It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham is back, baby. And Kevin Marks joins us. We have lots to talk about, including the big Samsung Galaxy. Oh, I don't want to say that. That's old. It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Stacey Higginbotham is back. Kevin Marks joins us. We'll talk about the just-announced Google deal to do its own TV service on YouTube early next year. We'll talk about the Pixel and who's getting it and who's not getting it tomorrow. And the Yahoo quarterly results are out, but there's no phone call. We'll talk about it and more next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 375, recorded Wednesday, October 19th, 2016. The intern yet. This Week in Google is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/twig. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/twig. and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit with their limited-time offer. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news, not just from Google, but from the Internet as a whole, Facebook, Google, Twitter, you know, all that jazz. So thrilled to see Stacey Higginbotham. I haven't seen her since I left for vacation. I missed a few shows. You missed a show. It's great to have you back.
It's great to be back and have you back.
IoTpodcast.com, Giga Stacey on the Twitter. And you know, a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned your pick of the week was this book, Will It Waffle? They must have heard it because I got Waffle, the Will It Waffle cookbook by Daniel Shumsky, creator of Waffleizer.com. He waffles everything in here from filet mignon to red velvet ice cream sandwiches.
I've not made the ice cream sandwiches.
These are called Stuffles, stuffing waffles. See, that's the best thing to do after Thanksgiving. Have a stuffing waffle. Isn't that awesome?
Yes.
So thank you. I still haven't received my fizzy water from Austin.
Oh, maybe it's because I declined mine. Maybe they just decided not to give you yours.
Oh, you and your journalistic ethics.
I'm sorry. Topo Chico, please send Leo something.
I don't feel like I cover fizzy water that really would influence me one way or the other on the fizzy water question. So,
see, I feel like I'm a popular tweeter when it comes to bar drinks and stuff. So people really trust my opinion on fizzy water.
Oh, you don't want to take any Topo Chico for free. Mm-mm.
Yeah, it'd be terrible.
We can't get it up here, so. Anyway, that's fine. I don't care. I don't drink. Actually, whenever they ask, you know, still or fizzy, I always get still. So I like still water. Here's Kevin Marks. He's coming to us all the way from the South Bay, where he is ensconced at kevinmarks.com in his beautiful garden. Hey, Kevin, good to see you.
You can't see much of the garden because I have to sit nearer the house now. The Wi-Fi is not as good on this laptop.
Okay. That's okay. It's working. That's all I care about. While we were in the middle of Windows Weekly, you know, we all knew Apple had to do an event or had planned to do an event this month, but the speculation was they would do it October 27th because their earnings was scheduled for the 27th. They moved it back. Yes, indeed. Apple just sent out the invite. I did not get one, in case you're interested. Hello again, it says. Join us for a special invitation-only event at the Apple campus at One Infinite Loop in Cupertino on Thursday, October 27th. So if you had October 27th on your pick six, congratulations. We all assume that Apple will announce new MacBooks, not probably new iPads. Be very interesting, though, to see if they do new Mac Pros, the Mac Pros haven't been updated in 3 years. The MacBook Pros are only a year old. But lots of rumors about what that might include. I know this is Twig, but that's a big story for our audience.
Everyone.
Everyone.
Yeah.
It's funny because we were talking about with Paul and Mary Jo on Windows Weekly about Microsoft's announcement the day before. And Paul said, yeah, well, what he believes Microsoft was doing was trying to figure out when Apple's announcement could be, because the worst thing possible would be for Microsoft to have a hardware event same day.
Right.
No one wants to have an event the same day as Apple. So, true. You know, Google waited till after the Apple event. Microsoft kind of threw a dart at the map and said, at the calendar, and said, well, we think we can get October 26th. And they did. They did. Because unlike Apple, Microsoft likes to mail its invitations out more than 1 week ahead of time. Unbelievable. Oh, Apple can do that, though.
They can.
Apple knows people will jump on a plane and come and see them.
Exactly. Yeah, they'll pay twice as much for their ticket because it's last-minute booking. But you know what? That's what happens. Anyway, so there's a story. And actually, there's a big Google story breaking right now from the Wall Street Journal. Looks like Google is going to do what Apple wanted to do, a web TV service. And according to the journal, it'll be a relatively low-cost $30 to $40 service. And the journal says they've signed up at least CBS for this planned web TV service. It'll be on the YouTube platform, likely to debut early next year.
So is this like a Hulu type thing on YouTube?
I'm thinking it's more like PlayStation View.
Okay.
Are you familiar? You're familiar with that, right?
Kevin Toefel talks about it all the time. He loves that. Until him, though, I had no idea that you could actually get TV over PlayStation View. So I was that's
pretty relatively new offering from Sony. And it has the advantage of getting live locals in some but not all markets. And that's really the cord cutter's dilemma is, you know, you can get most of what you want in terms of HBO, Showtime, even CNN and ESPN without a cable television or an antenna. But
you can't get ESPN.
Yeah, you can on Slingbox.
Oh, okay, Slingbox.
Slingbox TV, I'm pretty sure.
Got it. That makes sense. I was thinking without having to buy like new equipment.
Right. Well, this is the issue, of course. And the only reason Sling TV has it is because ESPN is so powerful. They're one of the few channels where they can thumb their nose at the cable companies. Most channels, like if you're HGTV or, you know, the Oprah channel, you don't dare do deals, over-the-top deals like this, because you don't want cable companies to get mad at you. But if you're ESPN, which is the most demanded and the most expensive.
It's like $5 a subscriber.
Yeah. They can say, because what, you know, is your cable company going to say, oh, well, we've decided not to carry ESPN anymore? Yeah, good luck. So Sling TV has AMC, CNN, ESPN, HGTV. It actually has a fairly good selection. That's Sling Orange for $20 a month. $40 Orange plus Blue gives you even more, including, by the way, the playoffs, the baseball playoffs.
Oh, I was thinking Bravo.
Bravo, I know. Well, and I'm all about the A&E, the high-class channels. Actually, AMC would be a big one for me because that's Walking Dead, Mad Men, that kind of thing.
Bravo is the Real Housewives franchise. It only sounds classy until you realize it's on it.
They all were. They were, you know, they used to be classy.
I know.
And they said, there's no money in that.
Yes. Well, they were supposed to be like fine arts when they originally brought
right.
it.
Right.
Yes, they were.
Like A&E. Yeah.
A&E maybe the Real Housewives will go to, you know, the opera.
Yeah. the real Housewives of the Sydney Opera House. So the new TV service, according to Wall Street Journal, is also near agreement with 21st Century Fox, Walt Disney, which is interesting because Disney is, you know, very tight with Apple, obviously. Steve Jobs was the number one shareholder in Disney. And now, of course, his widow, Lorene, is the individual shareholder in Disney. Be interesting. The new service, which the journal says is called Unplugged, aims to be a low-cost option targeting consumers who have either resisted to traditional pay TV or cut the cord due to rising subscriptions costs. $25 to $40 a month for a skinny bundle. So it's very much like PlayStation View. It looks almost identical to, but CBS is a big deal. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't think CBS on Hulu or is it ABC? It's ABC, Fox. Comedy Central, but I don't think CBS is part of that.
The real key is not so much like getting How I Met Your Mother, but getting live local, getting the Academy Awards and the Super Bowl and the local news and stuff like that.
Local news.
Local news. I don't care about local news
anymore. Cord cutters don't watch the local news.
maybe that's well, they can't. That's the whole point. PlayStation View, though, that's one of the things that's interesting about View, does give you local news in San Francisco and a few other markets. So you, that's their claim to fame. We're really it's interesting. I mean, this is moving along. This is moving along. This is cord cutters are not quite so out in the cold as they used to be. And it's interesting that Apple's been trying to do this with their Apple TV for the longest time. The funny thing is, Google doesn't really have its own hardware platform, but we were talking about this yesterday, YouTube's everywhere,
right?
Including Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
So
now, what would be interesting is how Apple responds to something like that. But I mean, it won't.
Is YouTube on fire? Does Amazon actually deploy YouTube?
I think you have. I think YouTube's like ESPN. You kind of have to.
Yeah,
and this has been Google's stealth entry into all this. Because, for instance, if you buy buy movies on the Google Play Movies, you can watch those movies on YouTube on the YouTube app. So,
you can now. That's
yes.
I didn't know. That's
I didn't know that till yesterday. Renee was telling us, or maybe it was Andy. Yeah.
Huh.
So that's kind of the little wedge that Google's able to. Remember that YouTube was not on Apple TV for a long time.
I don't. I've never bought into the Apple ecosystem. So
yeah.
Apple TV was never something that I was like, ooh, let's do that.
Yeah. YouTube is on Amazon Fire devices, says Sailor Lion in our chat room.
Okay. I thought it was, but I suddenly wondered because Amazon seems to be very anti-Google in that respect.
Well, they're, an anti-Apple. Remember, Amazon won't put its app on. Well, they say Apple keeps our app off of it's so bad for consumers. You know, these companies, I guess they have to look out for profits, blah, blah, blah. But it's because of things like this. You can't get Apple's stuff on anybody else. You can't get Amazon stuff on Apple. So people end up buying two things.
But you can't. But there's nothing stopping Amazon putting it on Android and Chromecast, as far as I know. But they just haven't bothered.
So the one of the questions, and Apple and Amazon differ on this. One of the questions was, is it Apple that's keeping Amazon off of the Apple TV, or is it Amazon refusing to make one for Apple TV? Both sides say it's the other side. I think that's an interesting data point, is that Amazon does not make something for Chromecast, or it doesn't put Chromecast in its app.
Doesn't sell the Chrome. Oh,
that's right.
It
won't sell anybody
Chromecast.
Else's. Won't sell Apple TVs either.
Oh, it wouldn't do that either now. Oh, wow.
I think not. Oh. They're very limited on what they'll sell.
I didn't realize that.
Let me see. Maybe I might be wrong. If I search for Apple TV, I get an ad for new Fire Stick TV with Alexa remote. I get an Apple TV mount. I don't see any Apple TVs. They'll sell Apple products, but it looks like if you go to Amazon, they really want to sell you a Fire TV, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Well, it does sort of half make sense.
Yeah, it's a double-edged sword, isn't it?
Yeah, Amazon has content to sell. If I've got a Prime subscription, I should be able to watch Prime on my Chromecast.
Right.
Yeah, that's...
It's on Roku. That's where I watch it. It's on Xbox. Yeah.
It's on my web TV.
It's on my Sony.
So that's very strange.
Well, and Amazon has an app on the iPad, or it initially, I mean, it was pretty, oh no, it took time to put the video app on the iPad, and you still can't buy anything because it doesn't want to give them any
money. They'll never let you buy anything. They don't want to give 30% to Apple. They do the same thing with Kindle and Audible. You have to go to the web to buy things.
But you don't have to do that on Android. Kindle on Android, you can buy things straight in the app because Google doesn't impose that. So. Right. It's not that. It is just pure. Oh, we want you to buy our thing.
So it's our supposition, our proposal that the best way to right now for the moment to buy movies or TV shows or rent movies or TV shows is do it through Google. That'll give you the widest array of devices you can play it on.
Does it give you the ability to download?
No.
Onto a tablet?
I don't believe so.
Google,
who does let you do that?
A Google Play does. I can,
oh, really?
The Google. Okay, so if I have like an Android cache, tablet,
like a cache, you don't.
Yeah.
You don't get to like.
Because on an iPad, I can download to my Amazon video library. I can actually download my Amazon content.
Okay.
Onto the iPad and watch it like on an airplane or in the car if it's my kid, you know.
Yeah. So the movies will have a little like download button next to them in the Google Play app.
Okay.
Okay.
So you can catch them locally for a flight or whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Good.
Okay.
That's good.
That's key.
Google has announced, speaking of new Google features, a fact check feature on Google News. You know,
it's too late.
It might be too late. This is the most fact challenged election in history.
But also, it wasn't clear how they were deciding who's a fact check and who isn't.
Well,
they're looking for special fact check markup in your page, but then at some point they're deciding whether your fact checks are facty enough or not.
Are they crowdsourcing like the facts?
They're using claim review.
Yeah, they're using some special markup that you put in your page. Say this is a claim review type of markup, mm-hmm.
And so you can claim.
And then presumably you can say this is a fact check,
right?
But they haven't. I haven't actually looked in detail, but they haven't said how they decide that your fact checking is facty enough for them.
So this is interesting. I didn't even know this existed. This is a markup for claim reviews or fact checks. So it has a property for the item that's being reviewed, the body of the review. It has all of the, this is really interesting. The intended audience, an embedded audio object.
This is a classic schema thing of having a million properties in it.
Yes.
A million. What an award won by or for this item. Fictional person connected with the creative work. Example of work, file format, funder, genre, has part. Some part of this has, oh my God, this is crazy. This is why we.
I see, yeah. So this is the problem with the schema is that it inherits everything. So,
oh, okay.
So claim review has one property, claim reviewed, but then it's inherited a whole part of things from creative work.
Creative work, got it. So the claim review specific stuff is. Just claim reviewed, item reviewed, review body, and review rating. All right.
Well, yeah, no, the other is just reviews. That's a classic review markup that you would do. Okay. But claim reviewed is a piece of text as well. So.
Oh, I see. So this is the only unique thing is this
yes.
piece of text. Huh, that's interesting. We're excited to see the growth of the fact check community, says Google, and to shine a light on its efforts to divine fact from fiction. There is apparently an international fact-checking network and more than 100 active sites, according to Duke University. Wow. So you'll be able to...
Is PolitiFact
one of those? I'm sure PolitiFact is in there, yeah.
Or PolitiFact.
Yeah, I'm sure they're
That makes more sense.
Yeah, they're the best known, right? That's a Florida... What is it? The Tallahassee...
Yeah, are they...
down there.
Huh. And they're... I wish Jeff were here. Affunded or affiliated with AP.
He knows the whole...
I know.
Yeah. For more information. Okay, so that's good. That's nice. Yeah, it's a little late. We could have used some fact-checking a little earlier.
I really wanted someone to create an Echo skill that it would listen to the debate. So, like, you could turn it on for the debate, and then when someone says something wrong, it would just go, well, yeah, there we go. Say something appropriate. How awesome would that be?
That'd be a great skill.
You could also turn it on at dinner parties. That would be totally obnoxious.
Liar! Liar! I wonder if you can do that with Echo. Can you just can you say to Echo, okay, now listen to everything from now on and then respond?
No.
Oh, Alexa, we'll tell you who won the debate according to VentureBeat.
Oh, and you know what? If you ask, we actually did this morning. If you ask who is winning the election, she will tell you the latest polling data, which is kind of useful.
Which poll, though? Who does she use?
Oh, I don't remember.
Yeah. I mean, sorry. There's quite a huge difference.
There is. There was a great story about how one African-American guy in like Ohio who's a Republican was skewing the LA Times, I think, data. I was like, wow, that's awesome.
Well, I know this from radio ratings for years. And even back to Tech TV. Tech TV had such a small audience that our ratings were very volatile. And I was finally explained to me, well, that's because there's really only one family with a people meter that watches Tech TV. And if they don't watch that night, your ratings are going to go way down.
It's like a sample spike.
That is awesome. It's like they had all the power. Did you send them flowers, Leo?
No, we don't know who it is. In fact, one of the things you sign when you get a people meter or an Arbitron diary is an agreement not to tell a soul, especially not the TV or radio station, that you have one of those. Because, of course, you'd be offered cars.
Those cookbooks and Topo Chico samples you're getting are nothing.
Nothing. They'd be coming at you.
Well, that was a thing with the record business in the UK. They used to survey some of the shops to see what the sales were, and that would define the charts.
Right.
And of course, the which shops it was leaked, and so they would employ people to go and buy things just from those shops.
Same thing happened in the U.S. Yeah. And of course, we know that the New York Times bestseller list is I think routinely manipulated that way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Especially by political books, yeah. The campaign by a big chunk.
Yes, I have friends who are best-selling authors, and there's a whole strategy there.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
And do you think that's how they became best-selling authors?
I think their books are high quality, but I think getting there fast is the key. So that first week, you do it, and then it kind of builds on itself. It's kind of like if you're a podcaster and you want to have an audience that downloads it before you go on iTunes.
I would never do such a thing.
So you could be on New and Notable.
I don't.
Or featured.
I really don't do that. Never did that. That's terrible. Remember the Just Mayo story? This is like a mini Theranos.
Yeah.
Just Mayo, which is a Silicon Valley startup that makes eggless mayonnaise. It's not just as in only, it's just as in justice. But the problem, I haven't tasted it. I don't know if it's good or not. But
it's okay. I've had it.
They good. Really wanted to get it into Whole Foods. And so what they did is they had employees go out and buy tons of it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I remember this. Yes. Yeah.
So.
I thought you were going to tell me they actually had eggs in there. And then I was going
to
be like,
that would
be a scandal. When you said mini Theranos, that's where my brain went.
No, it's not. It's not actually probably that would have been a mini Theranos. Yeah, it's not really a mini Theranos.
It's like a mini Wells Fargo.
But in this, here's why it's a,
a mini Wells Fargo, yes.
Here's why it's an issue is because, of course, they have venture capital. And they're showing in the pitch sheets, they're showing these incredible sales. And a number of the investors, some investors actually did the due diligence and turned them down. And a number of them feel like they were maybe manipulated a little bit. That's actually an ongoing story. I don't know the full details of that.
Yeah.
So it's a long-standing tradition. Go out and buy your books. Let's see. That was fact check.
Well, it says didn't someone say that like half the votes in the debate were Twitter bots? There was some story about that this week as well.
Half the debate? What do you mean the bots? The tweets? Debate tweets?
Yes, there were some like debate tweets. Who got the most tweets? And then someone did an analysis and said, "Oh, wait a minute! Like, there's a giant army of Twitter bots that are tweeting with the hashtag to try and."
Okay, don't get me started on Twitter again. It just drives Stacey crazy. But
it's terrible. Okay.
Here's the biggest problem with Twitter. Is that people give tweets any credence at all, even if they're bots or not.
Wait, you mean my polls that I do on Twitter aren't scientific?
No.
Shocker.
I think this is changing. I think it's rapidly changing. And I think, you know, the other story that broke this week about the Twitter sale is that Salesforce apparently considered the massive trolling on Twitter to be one of the reasons not to buy it. Disney, too. Jim Cramer, I don't know how reliable a source he is. He says, I was told by Salesforce that it was the trolls on Twitter that really scared them off, which kind of makes sense to me. But
I think I saw on Twitter Quentin Hardy over at the New York Times dispute that a little bit.
Yeah, there's plenty of other reasons not to buy Twitter.
Yes.
Yeah. It was more of the stockholders, the shareholders were saying, why are you buying that?
Yeah. But the real problem is not troll. I've come to the realization. The real problem isn't that there's trolling on Twitter. The real problem is that the media gives a single tweet huge weight. Companies give tweets huge weight. That's why companies for so long, customer service, if you wanted to get anything from customer service, don't call them, tweet them. As if that's some magically wonderful, powerful.
Oh, it is.
It's not powerful. It's only it's powerful because we give it power and the media gives it power. But honestly, any dim bulb can go say something on Twitter.
Right, but it's but that's the point is that is yeah, and they do all the time.
And they
do. Some of them take on, some of them don't.
Right.
So so it's not just that somebody says something on Twitter. It says somebody says something on Twitter, and then that gets shared and spread because it's striking.
Yeah, but it all comes down to people paying attention to this noise box that is Twitter.
And if, No.
Yes,
You're mistaking the content for the form there. They're paying attention to something that somebody has said. It just happens to be on Twitter.
What I'm saying, if the same thing happened on 4chan, and does often, people are smart enough to go, well, that's 4chan. Even Reddit, Reddit.
No, but the point is that a lot of memes start on 4chan, and they're now mainstream. It's just that they're not attributed.
Because they go to Twitter.
Or they go everywhere else. But that's the point.
There aren't that many places a 4chan meme can live. Reddit and Twitter.
No, they get picked up by BuzzFeed or Mashable or one of those guys.
But, yeah, the idea of images with big type over them is a 4chan thing that spread out to the rest of the web.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've done this.
I'm not going to talk about
three
Twitter.
Shows now.
I don't want to talk about Twitter ever again. The Pixel
Let's
phone.
Talk about Yes,
so I'm going to tell you something
Pixel.
I'm mad about. I want to know. I'm asking you, the chat room, and everybody else. So they said October 20th, right? Best as I could tell, anybody who ordered from Google is not getting it October 20th, even if you ordered right away. Now I don't know because I was in an airplane; I wasn't able to order later that day, and mine's coming November 8th. Jason Howell said, though, he ordered it right away, and his is coming next week. The people who are getting their Pixel phones tomorrow. Got it through Verizon.
Oh, yeah. Verizon did tell me because I was in a Verizon store this weekend and they said I could come back in Thursday to see it.
Shame on you, Google. Shame on you.
I thought I was getting shame for a minute there.
Shame, not you. Shame on Google. So, yeah, Frederick. So I went over to Jason. When's your Pixel coming next week? Mine's coming November 8th. But Frederica, our office manager, who's a Verizon customer, is getting hers tomorrow. So Google, which is famous for with its Nexus phones for not kowtowing to carriers' BS, is apparently kowtowed to Verizon's BS and has given them a one-week exclusive. That's what it looks like to me. Now, to confirm that, I need to ask you, chat room and anybody watching, is anybody getting a Pixel phone not from Verizon tomorrow? Crickets.
Like, I don't know. We can't hear the chat room.
All right. Now, there is an article on Android Police, which the chat room has just given me, saying Pixel orders are starting to ship from the Google Store. So some of the staff... Oh, good. All right. So I take it back. This is what I was looking for. 32 gigabyte. Okay. Who wants that? Why would you order that? So the credit cards got started getting charged last night. Oh, well, wait a minute. This is their evidence. Credit cards got charged last night. They haven't necessarily seen the shipping.
Right, but that usually means they're putting it in a box, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah.
You're charged when it goes there.
Yeah, it should mean.
Yeah.
All right, well, we'll see. You getting a Pixel, Stacey?
No, I wasn't really keen. I don't see a reason to upgrade my phone yet, really.
Are you an iPhone user or an Android user?
I'm an Android user, okay. So I've got the Nexus Small, the 5X.
Oh, it's time. Kevin, are you tempted or are you an... I can't remember. You're an iPhone guy, aren't you?
No, I'm an Android guy.
Okay.
Kevin, an iPhone guy?
That's a Nexus 6 he's got there.
Nexus 6?
That's the big old baby.
I like it. Well, I like it.
You know what's sad? All right. I have a good shame on you. That is no longer going to be updated as of next week. That's it. Boom.
Hello, that's
2-year-old phone.
Well, a 2-year-old phone is, I mean, like, if my phone were 2 years old, I'd upgrade it.
But isn't that the promise of Nexus, is that you're going to get updates? One would hope for more than 2 years. That phone's perfectly good.
But it's got N already, so I'm not waiting for an N update. You know, it's got Nougat, so, you know, it's another year before we get a major update.
You won't get there's an update 7.1 that these Pixels are coming with that has the Google Assistant and stuff, right?
Yeah, but nobody gets that.
Nobody gets that. I don't
understand. Nobody gets that.
It's exclusive to the Pixel for now. So
I know they've said that, but is that just the making a virtue out of necessity because it's so hard to deploy updates to Android, or is this actually strategy?
Well, that we debated this actually, Jason, and I actually looked at because we were trying to figure out if there was like a hardware differentiator on the
There
Pixel
is not.
Phone,
we know there's
and
not.
There is not.
There's a two-line hack that you can do to any Nexus phone and get the assistant on it.
So, okay. Yeah, it's just
So they're basically
our phone,
just saying
it's new and cool.
Yeah.
They're basically just saying we're deploying this to R1s first and we'll wait for other people to clamor for it. And maybe they're trying to put some pressure on the other people to update more regularly. Maybe that's the other half of it. But presumably they could put it in Play Services. That's the bit I don't understand. I don't think it requires an OS update.
So September 2017, the 5X and the 6P go out of support. Next year, next September.
Oh, okay, yeah.
You got till next September. This month, the Nexus 9, the Nexus 5, and the Nexus 6. Actually, the Nexus 5 went out last year. The Nexus 6 goes out this month. So these are the...
Yeah, we need a new Nexus 7.
What does that...
Yeah, that's sad, isn't it?
Does that include the security updates for no support, or is it just no OS updates?
That's a good question. I think security updates are provided for 3 years from release or 18 months from when they leave the Google Store, whichever is longer. So, security updates. I think the Nexus, I don't know. That's a good question. Don't know. That's a good question.
Because that would be a reason to, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, you want those security updates. After stage fright, we all are much more conscious of that. Very solid reviews, though, for the Pixel. A number of journalists, of course, had their embargoes lifted yesterday. And we're seeing Walt Mossberg in the Wall Street Journal, I think, said it's the best Android phone, or the Android phone you've been waiting for, is what the Wall Street Journal said. That was probably Joanna Stern.
I think that's Joanna.
Yeah.
Mossberg's now.
Walt Mossberg is now at Verge/Recode.
But he wrote a review as well.
He loved it too.
Nice about it. Yeah.
There have been
some. It doesn't look like a very nice phone. I agree. It's just it's pretty expensive.
Pretty.
And I don't feel quite ready to drop $1,000 on a phone at the moment.
Right.
I mean, normal people? Are normal people even clamoring for an update? I feel like 2 years is about the accepted life of a phone, right? So.
I mean, that's the thing. This one is 2 years old and still feels good because it was a top range end. I did spend $1,000, well, nearly not quite, but like $700 or something 2 years ago, and it's been a good phone. So that's if I'd bought the one of the older, slower ones 2 years ago, and I was due an update from Verizon or something, then I'd probably go and look at it because then you don't see the price in the same way.
Is there a technical reason for that, Kevin? I mean. You know, Apple does the same thing with its iPad and its iPhone and so forth. Is it that the newer versions of Android wouldn't run well on a Nexus 6, or there's some hardware missing from a Nexus 6 that it needs, or is it just planned obsolescence?
It's probably just more the number of configurations they want to spend time on testing. But, you know, a lot of it is just like we've decided to draw a line, you know, so... Like they decided to stop updating Chrome on versions of Mac OS before 10.7 or whatever it is. There's some 10.8 now. So they've just arbitrarily said, okay, we're not going to bother updating things more than X versions old. And I think it's that same kind of policy to try and limit the number of cases they have to deal with.
It just kind of hurts my sensibilities.
I don't think it's wholly wise. Yeah, I think. Yeah. I mean, the that's the point. I mean, the weird thing is, you know. The new one is nice. I'm sure it's lovely, and I'm sure it's a bit better than this one. But this one has a 4K screen. It's got a great camera. It doesn't seem to stutter when I'm browsing the web or doing things with it. Okay, I don't do much gaming with it, but it seems to cope. So it doesn't feel like this one is, you know, people have moved beyond its capacities. The thing I was expecting to sort of be that I must buy this was the VR AR stuff, but they haven't made it, you know, while they've shipped that, they haven't made as much of a big deal about it, and it doesn't seem like there's a I must have this app thing there that makes you want to buy the phone.
Yeah, as far as I can see, Daydream looks just like a Google Cardboard in a nicer container.
Oh, but I mean, with a nicer frame rate and bit.
Is it better? So they have improved the technology.
Yeah, it does work better. The latency is lower. The gyroscope stuff is lower latency, so that the head turning feels better. So they have improved a bunch of stuff, but you still need a reason to be using VR stuff in the first place, right, rather than just being a gimmicky
player.
There's no
killer, there's no killer app yet.
I can't think of one.
I can't either.
For VR?
Yeah, I'm kind of starting to turn into a VR skeptic, to be honest with you.
Join the club.
Really? You feel that way too?
It's warm and cozy.
That's just because you're in Austin. Really? You feel that way too? Okay. Because I get people argue violent with me saying, oh, you know, you're just missing the point. But I just feel like I have all of the, I have the Vive and the Rift and all that stuff. And I don't see a lot of, I don't have an internal drive to go use it.
Yeah, and maybe it's because I'm not a gamer and because I don't want to walk around with something on my face.
I like gaming, but I think gaming is just as compelling on a nice screen that's fairly close. That's just as immersive and a lot less nausea inducing.
Yeah.
It does make the gaming more immersive and it enables some different, slightly different kinds of games, though I'm not sure we've fully seen those yet.
Yeah, I recognize that it may just be that we just haven't gotten to that.
But it's also, the game people are getting grumpy because they've got to develop for four different platforms as well. That's the other part of it.
Right. I was really enamored of it when I first got it, and I spent a lot of time in there, but I kind of got over it. I am a gamer. I love gaming. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of got over it. And maybe it's just a lack of the killer app. Maybe we'll see that sometime at some point.
I think I will say, someone in the chat room said it, but I totally agree with them. AR, like augmented reality, is much more compelling.
Yes.
And not because of Pokemon Go, although, yay.
You still playing that?
Okay, my daughter is 10 and
Kids
she
do.
Loves it.
Kids
and
love
we're...
it.
We do it together.
And you bond
and
you walk, you take walks and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. It's cute.
No, I think it's cute.
So, yeah, I'm pro AR for, especially industrial, and I think as the world gets more complex, it becomes really interesting to see, how you can combine things. But, again, that's not really consumer.
Yeah. But that was the thing I was surprised about with the Pixel phone, because I was expecting it to be more AR-ready than it is.
Yeah.
And have, I've been saying this for a year, but have two cameras on the back so that you can do stereoscopic straight mm-hmm. through and then overlay on it.
Oh.
And that would give you quite a lot of power with it, and you can do that. But all the Google headsets they've shipped have cover up the camera, so you can't do that. The only one that does it is the
Vive, what do you call it? Or the Oculus. One of the I think. Oh, hello,
Katie. Did you bathe your hands in tuna fish before doing the show? Watching this cat attack your hands.
I love your hands.
Say hello. There's something on the keyboard next.
There's something about your hands I really
get messages.
Like.
What's it called? The the ViewMaster one. The ViewMaster cardboard thing does have is transparent on the back and does do overlays.
Oh, okay. Well, see, because Google does a lot with overlays and a lot with pushing information through your phone, like AR-esque kind of things anyway. So I always thought that. You're right. They would be a natural kind of contender to offer something
the
like this.
The ViewMaster is totally AR. It is not, in fact, VR. Mm-hmm. And it's very cool. Right. I really like it. I mean, okay. Carson, did you get it for your kids? VR. It's VR? You got VR for your kids. See, I think the ViewMaster is kind of very interesting. You think it's more VR than AR? They're billing it as VR.
And visiting the places you've always dreamed of.
So there is this, which is the kind of a Google Cardboard kind of VR component to it.
Yeah.
But then there's also, so it is both, okay. But then there's also this really, I think, cool thing where you can, you put a disc down.
And then you see things floating above it, yeah.
Yeah. Carson, you have it, right?
Yes. You're right. I haven't used the disc in a long time.
No, that's the point. I mean, I'm not saying
it's cool at first.
I'm not sure what they built with it was necessarily the right answer, but the point was they actually thought about, I can pull video through and overlay stuff on top of it.
Right.
And I thought we would be getting more of that from Google, because they have bought Magic Leap and there's a bunch of stuff we know that's sort of they're thinking about there.
It's just too early.
They bought Magic Leap?
No, they have a big investment in Magic
Leap. Okay. I was like, holy, what?
No, just a big
they
investment.
They bought big chunks of Magic Leap. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I don't know what their percentage is, but they have such a large percentage, it's effectively.
Yeah, I think they're within our control, but they have. But that's the thing. I was expecting more in terms of hardware readiness in this cycle, and I guess that isn't happening this cycle because we've got to wait for the next cycle soon.
Yeah, it's too early. It's too early yet.
But a lot of it, you know, Apple has now done two cameras on the back.
This is the Magic Leap demo. When every time I see this, they say shot directly through Magic Leap. They didn't do any special effects, but so when I see this, I get very excited about this. I mean, this is very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Here's for some reason, it's a woman working at a computer and she's got a galaxy or a solar system floating above her for no apparent reason. maybe she's doing research on the motion of the sun. I don't know.
But you would think she would then look at it.
Well, she's not the one wearing
the headset.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's true.
Although, didn't they say Magic Leap won't require a headset? I thought that was part of it. No.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the thing is, if you've got the camera on the back and the screen, you can do it. You can just do it straight through, and you can do that with the phones now. That's what Pokemon does.
Right.
What you can do is. Also, you know, if the point of having two cameras is A, it gives you a stereoscopic view as a human, so you can go straight in your eye, but also it means you can reconstruct depth from it.
Right.
So because you've got two cameras that you know the spacing between them, it can reconstruct the depth of where you are and decide what things are in front and what things are behind.
This is a Wired story about Magic Leap that they got a demo nobody else had seen. But it's pretty cool. Pretty cool. I'm willing to stipulate that we are just in such early days of VR and AR. It would be foolish. It'd be like somebody saying in the days of the Atari 2600, oh, video games, nobody's ever going to play those. It's just too early, right?
Well, except that, you know, I've been watching VR demos since like 1988.
Well, that's the problem,
Yeah.
We haven't made a lot of progress.
And the same scenarios are there in people's heads, but maybe we're just starting to see them realized. A lot of it is Neal Stephenson, isn't it? We can blame him
for it's sci-fi. Actually, I loved, you know, President Obama did an interview with Joey Ito of the Media Lab. It was published in Wired magazine. And the very first thing out of his mouth, I was so impressed. And obviously, I mean, it's his science advisors. He even said, my science advisors tell me. But he said, you know, the problem we have is that we have this vision of VR and artificial intelligence that comes from science fiction, of this generalized intelligence like HAL 9000 or Star Trek. He says that's a long way off, but specialized AI is around us all the time now, and that's where you know things are happening right now. We shouldn't base our judgment on what's going to happen with AI, and I think this extends to VR and AR as well, based on our science fiction based expectations. The holodeck is a way off. It doesn't mean we're not going to have some sort of useful AR sooner.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we have useful AR today. Actually, in industrial uses, people are like doing it all the time.
Right.
So,
let's take a break. Stacey Higginbotham is here from Stacey on IoT, the IoT podcast, and This Week in Google. We're reunited. And it feels so good. Kevin Marks also here, regular on the show from kevinmarks.com. He's a big fan of open web standards in the indie web, and I am too. We'll have more in just a moment. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage, something Quicken Loans has made just for you, the geek, the person who's comfortable on the internet. Rocket Mortgage takes the normally tedious, long-time, paper-based process of getting a home mortgage or a refi, puts it all online, not just on the desktop, but you can actually do it on your phone or your iPad. You can get a loan almost instantly that's tailored to your unique financial situation. Share your bank statements and pay stubs with the touch of a button. And do it all online. You can find out more at quickenloans.com/twig. quickenloans.com/twig. It's a quick online process you can manage from the convenience of your couch. And yes, I know there's still a piece of paper you have to sign when you get that loan, but they come to you. They actually send a notary to your house with the papers. You just sign it. It makes it so easy. Fast and easy. quickenloans.com, one of the best loan agencies in the country. And now they've made it even better with Rocket Mortgage. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support. You could check it out right now, quickenloans.com/twig. Yesterday was supposed to be an earnings call from Yahoo, but they said, zip it. They did not want to talk, no doubt, about the really horrific news about Yahoo lately. Even Verizon says this could affect our deal. They've asked for $1 billion off the $4.8 billion deal. Yahoo, of course, as we all know, was hacked 4 years ago, I think. No, in 2014, and that at least half a billion of its email accounts were released. The company says it was state-sponsored hacker, although I've never heard of a state-sponsored hacker trying to sell this stuff on the dark net, and that's what happened. The question is, well, when did they learn about it? And the evidence is they might have known about it as early as June or July and neglected to mention anything, hoping not to scotch the sale.
Ooh.
Then we found out that Verizon, although they had fought court orders in the past, had a secret court order asking it to sift through Yahoo Mail, not Verizon, Yahoo, through sift through Yahoo Mail looking for a digital signature of a bad actor. And even though they'd fought such orders in the past and lost, they decided, well, let's not bother with that. And at first we thought that the story was, Reuters story was, that they had slightly modified the spam filter to find this. Turns out maybe that was a lot worse than that. They wrote a poorly executed rootkit-like malware to put on their own servers. And some say put all of their users at risk with this. Alex Stamos, who was their chief of security back then, apparently was shocked to find this rootkit. At first, they thought they'd been hacked, and then they were told by the company, oh, no, that's our stuff. He left shortly after and went to Facebook, where he's running security. Anyway, I'm not surprised, given all of that, that Yahoo decided not to pull a Trump and not show up for its earnings call. What were the earnings, though? I think they... I don't know. See, I don't know how to judge these earnings. I don't know what this even means, but I'm not an investor, so... I mean, they made money, right?
Yahoo's made money. They've made money for a while, right?
They met their earnings goal by cost-cutting.
Oh, well, that doesn't necessarily mean they made money.
Yeah.
It depends on how high the goals were.
Yeah, right. And how much the costs that were cut. Analysts expected 14 cents a share. Instead, they did 20 cents normally. In a normal environment, that would be really big news, and the stock market would have gone up a lot. But the result, according to Recode, is primarily due to cost cuts and not business growth.
Right.
The adjusted EBITDA, which I forgot what that stands for.
EBITDA, earnings before income taxes, depreciation, and amortization.
Man, you're good.
I took the Chartered Financial Analyst exam.
What?
I did not pass.
What?
I did. Yeah. I started out.
Were you
going to
be a CFO?
No, I wanted to be a better financial journalist.
Oh, that's smart. That's really smart.
No. Did you people call me dumb, Leo.
I never. No, you're very smart. So you took classes to do that?
I studied on my own, but it's a pretty intense. It's like stats and accounting.
Yeah.
And,
so you know what EBITDA is, and you even know what EBITDA stands for. Mm-hmm. Their EBITDA was down from $244 million to $229 million, which really means that their CFO, Ken Goldman, did some clever, creative accounting to make it look better than it really was. Revenue in mobile video and native rose. The big money makers declined as advertisers fled and traffic declined. Although some wag on Twitter said there must have been a big bump actually in ad sales when everybody logged into Yahoo to change their password to delete their account. Does not show up in the numbers. Display ad revenue down 7%. Search engine revenue. Wait a minute. Yahoo has search engine revenue? Yes, they do, but it was down 14%.
Yeah, don't they cut deals with like device makers?
And I think it's Bing.
They're
Bing resellers.
That's right. Firefox defaults to Yahoo Search.
Yeah, but Yahoo Search comes from Bing, right? Yahoo doesn't run its own search engine.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
Okay. Well, I decided to look up the termination fee for the Yahoo Verizon deal just to see.
Oh, I'm curious myself.
So, ta-da. It's $144.8 million.
But
and that is if Yahoo paying Verizon.
If there's cause. Oh, Yahoo paying Verizon.
Yahoo must pay Verizon in certain circumstances.
But that's the question.
SEC
are these the, you know, and Verizon's attorney, general counselor said this is a material. This is material. So, that's code for this might have something. This might give us a reason.
Right. And if the purchase agreement is terminated by Verizon due to breach of agreement, Yahoo is supposed to reimburse Verizon's expenses in the amount of $15 million.
So its question is this a breach of the agreement? And I think here would be the question. What did Marissa Meyer know and when did she know it?
Yes, God, wow.
That would be material. Because if she knew about the hack and didn't disclose to Verizon before the sale, well, that's it.
Yeah.
But I think what Verizon's going to do is they still see value in Yahoo. They're just going to they're going to say, well, okay, we're either walk and you give us $100 some million or you take $1 billion off the top.
And if I were Yahoo, I'd be like, yep, okay.
Yeah, whatever you want.
Whatever.
Whatever you want. So Yahoo is investigating itself. There are also shareholder lawsuits, national security issues. Kara Swisher says, in other words, Yahoo's sale limps forward, which is in keeping with how it's been going on for years now. But at least it's consistent. Although, I will miss the Meyer-Goldman quarterly earnings show, which seems to have closed without one final performance. There, Yahoo. What's funny is Yahoo has all these long-term deals all over Silicon Valley. So there's still Yahoo billboards. And when you go to a 49ers game, I'm sad to say our season tickets are in the Yahoo section and you have to go up an escalator that periodically goes Yahoo. And whenever something good happens, I can't remember what it is, they blare that through the stadium speakers. It's like, it's crazy.
Wow, they sold out. That is really impressive.
And it's a long-term contract. They probably already paid for it. So not only do the 49ers stink, but we have to put up with Yahoo. Well,
if they're so terrible, you don't have to put up with Yahoo that often.
I've only been to one game, the one game they won this season. So there you go. The first day, they won their opener for reasons no one understands and then proceeded to lose every game after that.
The 49ers are, just help me out here, baseball, football?
They're the football. They're the Yahoo of football.
Okay. Just checking.
Oh, man. I have to ride a purple escalator to go to the game.
It could be an Ask Jeeves escalator.
It's practically as bad. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. So Verizon is kind of making noise. I think hinting that they could pull out really is more about how low can we get this price.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Yahoo has the ad technology I don't know. Verizon's been buying all sorts of crazy stuff. So
I thought we would have a nice conversation with Jeff Jarvis and the gang on this one because he is our moral compass. But I'll ask you two. There's a bit of a brouhaha brewing in Silicon Valley right now because Peter Thiel, the venture capitalist who spoke at the Republican convention on behalf of Donald Trump, and who funded the Hulk Hogan lawsuit that put Gawker out of business, has pledged $1.25 million to the Trump candidacy. Now, some might say, in fact, I might be one of them, well, that's his perfect right. Trump is the nominee of a major political party in the United States, whatever you think of him or his, you know, politics. And but there are those. And so Thiel, who is an advisor and not on the board, but an advisor for a Y Combinator, they've been calling for his ouster there. Sam Altman, the CEO of Y Combinator, wrote a stirring defense of the First Amendment and said, no, you know, while we're no fans of Donald Trump, we don't see any reason to dump Peter Thiel, leading Gizmodo to say Sam Altman should resign. And we should mention that Ellen Pao, who you may remember, ran Reddit for a while and now runs a nonprofit, wrote a piece on Medium in which she said, because of Y Combinator's support of Peter Thiel, we can't be a part of Y Combinator anymore. So right. It's wild. But
they said they wouldn't work with Y Combinator themselves, but would work with companies they fund. So they're basically saying, we don't trust your management structure because Thiel is on it.
So are they not going to have Facebook because Thiel is on Facebook's board?
Well, and Mark, there is a good question. Mark Zuckerberg also asked about all this in a leaked memo. So he didn't. This isn't a public statement. Defends keeping Peter Thiel. Is he on the board?
He is on the board.
He says,
get this.
And he owns a big chunk of it still, I think.
Yeah, right. He was the first investor, right? I saw the social network. I know the history. He said, it's diversity. Here's the post, which is not, again, not public. It was an internal company post, but of course those things don't stay private. I want to quickly address the questions and concerns about Peter Thiel as a board member and Trump supporter. We can't create a culture that says it cares about diversity and then excludes almost half the country because they black a political candidate. There are many reasons a person might support Trump that do not involve racism, sexism, xenophobia, or accepting sexual assault. It may be because they believe strongly in smaller government. I don't think Trump said anything about that. A different tax policy, healthcare system, religious issues, gun rights, or any other issue where he disagrees with Hillary. That's ultimately why what Facebook is about, giving everyone the power to share experiences. In any way, it's diversity.
So now I
normally would shut up here, but I'm going to say this ahead of time before you guys are put on the spot. I think that's right. I think Peter Thiel, however you feel about Trump, should not only have the right to donate, but how would we feel if a company kicked off a board member because he gave money to Hillary Clinton?
So Mozilla did that with Brandon, what's his name?
That's right, Brandon Eich.
Yep.
Okay, so I think is it a red herring? Is it a straw man?
Let's call it a straw man.
Wait till we figure this out. Okay, so.
Straw herring.
Straw herring, there we go. I think up until the sexual assault kind of comments surfaced, people were, hey, this dude's kind of, maybe not my style. Maybe he treats women really crappily, blah, blah, blah. I think disagreeing with someone's politics and then standing up against someone who is, I'm just going to say it, a reprehensible human being who has attacked half the population. It's kind of like saying, and I'm not going to go, I'm going all Godwin here, but it's kind of like saying, did you support Hitler? And if Trump is accused of a crime, so he's got several lawsuits against him, they're civil lawsuits, I believe, then it becomes kind of a different story because boards and board memberships, they do have like moral hazard clauses.
But a lawsuit is not a criminal action. That's a civil action.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I agree. If Donald Trump were
comments were total moral hazard.
Oh, like, I agree, Leo, too.
This
is the very weird position we're put in because, yes, of course. And if he were a third-party candidate, everybody would go, oh, but he's not. He's the candidate of the Republican Party.
there has to be like, in, again, I am totally fine up until like a lot of that came, like there was actual proof that this guy is kind of morally hazardous, right? Is that bad? We kind of knew it, but we didn't have proof. That's where I feel like things start to diverge into, can you really support someone who is kind of a really awful human being and there's proof of it? And I'm not even talking about his politics.
Like, what if it were Joe McCarthy?
He had a political stance. I mean, and I guess you could actually, you can't argue that now. I was going to say, you could argue that it's like Kennedy sleeping around, but if Kennedy were a rapist, then maybe.
I'm really torn on this because, of course, what you say has a lot of merit. And we're put in a very awkward position because the Republican Party has nominated this person.
What if he were a serial killer? I mean, the man.
I don't know.
Does that change it?
Can you fire Peter Thiel because he has poor judgment in political candidates?
Well, I think at this.
I mean, would it be different if Thiel had given $1.25 million to the Republican Party, the RNC?
That would be fine.
That'd be okay.
That'd be a bit better, yeah. But the other thing is that Thiel himself has said all kinds of strange and bizarre things too. You know, he did write the article for Cato saying that the rot set in when women got the vote and those kinds of things. You know, he's on record as supporting a lot of very strange things. And explicitly discriminating against women.
But this didn't come up until he gave $1.25 million.
Do you think
that's the last straw on a continued?
I think people question Peter Thiel for a while.
Yeah. I think saying we have a commitment to diversity and so we're backing this guy who is an extreme sexist and has a bunch of very weird views is a slightly odd thing to do. I mean, it is the challenge is, yeah, where do you cross the line? How do you tolerate the intolerable? And broadly, I think people should have the rights to their political views, but it doesn't necessarily mean they should be free from other people deciding what to think about them based on those political views.
If Thiel gave money to David Duke, Klansman David Duke, okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. I think the only point I raise is the fact that this is the nominee of one of the two major political parties. That's what complicates this, right?
That's the bit I'm not as comfortable with that side of it. Sure, but you know there's a lot of strangeness about Thiel and some of the sort of political stuff that's talked around it in those circles. Mm-hmm. And this is the bit that's odd is that the Valley has this uneasy political sort of consensus that does include a fairly sort of off the charts libertarianism, along with the sort of neoliberal consensus end of the other political spectrum. And that's if you look at, you know, who the Valley donates to and who they funds, there is a lot of this effectively anti-government almost entirely was the culture of the Valley for a very long time. And so some of this is that part of it moving into that orbit. But also some of it is just like he may just be doing it to mess with people. It's not clear. But he is clearly sending a signal that there is a set of things that he decides he wants to do. And I think it's the association of that that's the thing that's damaging to a Facebook and Y Combinator.
It's really interesting because it really does echo the Brendan Eich story from three years ago. Brendan Eich donated in support of Proposition 8, which banned gay marriage. Yeah. And as a result, was forced out at Mozilla, even though Eich was he wasn't just a kind of figurehead at Mozilla. He was a very important part of Mozilla.
He's a CTO.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did not agree with that. I thought that was not a great decision, personally, when that happened.
So this is but I think it's on a spectrum, but it's the same question, which is if we have, I mean, in this country, I think we need to, the First Amendment, as has been said many times, is only defended when somebody says something you hate. You can't defend it only when people agree with you.
And the First Amendment only protects against government intervention.
I understand.
But
But we have a culture that you should be in normal political discourse. You shouldn't have your opinion if it is against the mainstream, be held against you. That's part of why we have a two-party system.
Yes,
we have elections.
If your opinion is that other people don't deserve civil rights or should be discriminated against, then it is problematic. And if that's the baseline, you know, the reason that people are upset about this is that they're saying, well, as long as Teal's associated with Y Combinator, I don't feel that I would be judged on my merits there because he has.
I can understand why Ellen Powell would say, okay, we're not going to deal with Y Combinator anymore. That I understand. She's been, you know, she has been the victim of some horrific stuff. And as a result, I understand her sensitivity to this. And I can't remember what her organization is, but I gathered that this was kind of the tenor of the organization anyway.
Diversity focused organization.
Yeah, it was diversity focused organization. So, and that's within her rights, and so I can't blame her. But should Sam Altman, the CEO I understand also why Gizmodo would write Sam Altman should be fired at Y Combinator, because Gizmodo was one of Peter Thiel's victims, right? Gal Gawker was one of Peter Thiel's victims. So, this is a mess.
So if Sam Altman, as a woman, if Trump is able to become president, that really says a lot about what's allowed in our culture. And people can be like, no, I still love women. I would never do that, blah, blah, blah. But if you can say those things and be accused of those things and still become president of the United States and have people stand behind you, that's kind of like that would be like giving money to David Duke and electing him president because you liked his economic policy.
Right.
He's not great for blacks, but, you know. Right. And I feel like people aren't. Maybe they don't understand the depths of that. I really don't. It baffles me. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I'm certainly, believe me, it baffles me too. But, and I'm somewhat arguing this from a devil's advocate position. But, I'm a virulent liberal. I know plenty, unfortunately, in my opinion, know a number of people, including family members, who are voting for Trump. So. You're in Texas. I imagine you know a few people. You see a Trump few.
My parents are voting for Trump. My dad is.
So should you fire your father from the family?
I'm not. No, because he's a person who is not representing anything other than my dad. I mean, Y Combinator, the reason why people are like saying do this is because they want to say for Y Combinator to make a stance against Trump's stance on women. I know, and I really don't. I don't know if I think Thiel should be fired. I've always thought Thiel was a little. Once he started seasteading, you know.
Right. No.
I was
I think. I agree with you and Kevin that there may be larger reasons why Thiel probably should be ostracized from Silicon Valley. But.
If this gives us an opportunity to examine some of those things, then that's useful. So that's the, when I was at Google, we were setting up the original Google PAC, which was under the old PAC rules, where you employees had to donate and you couldn't just throw company money at it before things got weird. And one of the reasons we were doing that was because all the Google employees did was donate to Democrats, and Google as a company needed to donate to Republicans who shared their agenda as well to make sure that they could do some kind of lobbying. This was before Google's lobbying opposition grew to the size it is now. And that was very much a culturally, we're very much aligned with the Democrats and that corner of the neoliberal thing. There are a set of Republicans that are aligned with us on tech policy that we want to work with. And you've got to compromise with them on maybe some of the other issues because they'd be better than the other person running in that Republican primary or whatever. So there are things like that way that you end up making those kinds of compromises. And obviously I've got Republican friends and people with all kinds of beliefs. And that's not something that you don't necessarily want to fire, family members and friends. That's not the point. The point is, if they demonstrably have beliefs that discriminate against people and measurably the place isn't as diverse as it could be, as it should be, then that's when you start asking about the default assumptions here.
Yeah.
That's I think, you know, I haven't read everything that Ellen Powers wrote about, but that's the point she's making. The point of Project Include, which is her thing, is to say it's not just about explicit discrimination, it's about the implicit stuff that stops people from applying. And having Peter Thiel on your board of directors is going to stop a lot of women and minorities from applying.
That's
because
fair. That's fair.
Because they would be like, I don't want am I going to get a that. Fair shake here? Do I want anything to do with this?
Yeah. I feel like... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, wasn't that Mozilla's argument with Brandon that our audience really strongly believes, and that's going to damage our ability to, I don't know, serve.
It was just much. I wonder
it was,
though.
It was the staff as well. It was a lot of employers were saying, "This is, you know, Mozilla has been a good employer of us. We've had corporate support. We're worried about this and what that implies, maybe going on behind the scenes or even subconsciously, and it makes us nervous." And Brendan did not do a good job of apologizing, expressing that, and coming through with that, but retreated into the "I have a First Amendment right to what I like," blah blah blah, which didn't reassure them. And I think that's what led to me being driven out.
And let me reassure you, Stacey, I completely understand your 100% understand your position, and I'm equally appalled. Although I find it ironic that you know. Trump's been saying things like this, worse things, in my opinion. I think he'd blow up the world.
Yes.
I think it'd be bad for men and women. But I understand that he somehow crossed a very significant line.
There's proof.
In the past week. Right.
I mean, for some people, that's all, like, for some people, hearing that is enough.
Right.
Is it stupid? Maybe, but.
I wonder if we had some historic, if we had some distance, if it would, because I'm thinking back, I remember Goldwater Johnson, where Democrats thought Goldwater was, you know, as bad as Trump. And if you look back historically, you might kind of laugh at that kind of, and of course, Johnson made the very famous Daisy commercial where the you know, kid counts down and the nuclear bomb goes off. And some say that that's why Goldwater lost. But I, you know, I remember my uncle who was in the CIA at the time saying, "I'm not voting for that Hayseed Johnson." So it was just as, I mean, and you can go back even farther, well beyond my memory, but into the 18th and 19th century, we had similar battles over other, you know, similarly virulent battles. And that's maybe part of the normal political discussion. I mean, when 43, 44, 45% of the country support this guy, this is actually Sam Altman's, point that he makes in his blog post. We should all feel a duty to try to understand the roughly half of the country that thinks we, and by we he means the people who support Clinton, are severely misguided. I don't understand how 43% of the country supports Trump, but I'd like to find out, because we have to include everyone in our path forward. If our best ideas are to stop talking to or fire anyone who disagrees with us, we'll be facing this whole situation again in 2020. That kind of diversity is painful and unpopular, but it's critical to the health of a democratic and pluralistic society. We shouldn't start purging people for supporting the wrong political candidate. That's not how things are done in this country.
I would feel better if we were having an honest debate over issues.
Well, so I would we all.
No. Well, no,
but
I
we're
know.
Not.
But the 43% of the country that are voting for Trump, in a lot of ways, they're not voting for Trump. They're voting against their current situation.
Or voting against Clinton.
Or voting against Clinton.
Right.
And I think that's a really important distinction that, honestly, the people in Silicon Valley are glossing over. If 43% of the country thinks utterly differently from them, some of that's probably because of the advantages or even jobs that have been taken away, not because of Silicon Valley, but it's certainly exacerbated by some of the things that Silicon Valley has enabled or benefits that have accrued to places that aren't maybe the middle of the country.
Right.
And I don't know.
So that's what I was trying to get at. They're effectively voting against the neoliberal consensus. And for some reason, Hillary is seen as more representative of that than Trump is, because Trump has positioned himself as being an outsider, despite being a real estate developer with good relationship with banks, who comes from New York. But that's, you know, that there's the choice people have got. And Hillary is seen as representing the establishment, and therefore anyway, that's why the speeches to banks were an issue, and that was there was all that stuff in the primary as well, that some of that has stuck. So that's that is, I think, the divide that we're not quite seeing, because the parties have both been in the neoliberal camp for the last 20 years. And that opposition has not been had a way to express itself. So to some extent, Trump is riding that.
And then there's the...
I need to move this umbrella so that I don't actually have a glowing white mouth, don't I?
Yeah, I like it. It actually is very timely. It looks like you've been, you've got a gag. And then there's the opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal by computer science, Yale computer science professor, and quite highly respected computer science professor, David Lertner. Trump and the emasculated voter. He says voting for Trump, this is for Trump, is like throwing a gin bottle through the windows of the White House. It's something he really wants to do. So I think most of us just can't wait till this is all over. But I thought I should raise this because this is I know people say, well, that's not a tech issue. It is a tech issue because here we have Y Combinator, one of the premier startup schools in the country and highly respected in the middle of embroiled in this. And Peter Thiel, who, whatever you think of Peter Thiel, is one of our most successful investors in tech. Weird. Samsung has asked and demanded that YouTube remove a video of a Grand Theft Auto mod that involves using a Note 7 as a bomb. This is a mod for Grand Theft Auto 5 that turns the Galaxy Note 7 into an in-game weapon. And Samsung has issued a DMCA takedown. I guess it does the mod does have the word Samsung. It's clearly a Note 7.
Right.
And they succeeded. This video no longer available due to a copyright claim by Samsung Electronics. You can run Samsung, but you just can't hide.
I am intrigued by this idea of the airports letting you like Samsung setting up trading stations
at
airports.
Pop-ups. I love that.
I feel so bad for Samsung.
I do too. I mean, and I love the Note 7.
My mother and my mom and dad both have Note 7s. They upgraded the first time, and now my mom is like, she's kind of in the point where you will pry this from my cold, dead hands.
She still has it?
She still has it. And my dad, she's like, your father has drunk the Kool-Aid. He's turning it in. And I'm like, Mom.
No. Get your mom to turn it in.
You have to turn it in. And she's like,
oh, my God. All right. Let me explain. We think we know now what's happening. And we've had some very interesting conversations about this, including yesterday with Steve Gibson. And on Sunday with Ben Thompson of Stratechery, it was Ben's opinion, and I think he's right, that the reason that even the replacement ones are broken is it's a fundamental flaw in the way the battery was made, not just the one made by the Samsung affiliate, which is what they originally thought, but all of them. They put too much battery in too small a case, and the compression on the layers in the battery is causing plating to occur. And the lithium ion plating around the insulator is causing short circuits. In other words, all Note 7s are potentially bombs, and no Note 7 is safe. And your mom should absolutely send hers back. And I feel for her. I love the Note 7. What a great phone.
What do I tell her to get? She's also upset because one of the games she's on, she's at a high level, and that's going to reset again.
Do I think a complete one-for-one trade and get $100 from Samsung if she gets a Galaxy S7.
Okay.
Which has never had any problem. It's been out for 6 months or 7 months now. It's a wonderful phone. It is effectively a small Note 7 without the stylus. Is she really attached to the stylus?
She's attached to the large size because I guess she's older.
It's a little smaller. If she really wants a large, you know what? Get her an iPhone 7. Say, oh no, it's a Note 7. They just changed the Note to iPhone.
Okay, she's not stupid.
Oh, okay,
she is a little weird about this, but she's not a dumb lady.
She should look at the Galaxy S7 because it's just as good a camera. It's the same screen. It's just it is a little smaller.
Right.
It's a very nice phone, and it's basically the Note 7 was a slightly enlarged S7. Otherwise, what do you think?
So it's not actually 7 inches, is it? It's just a bit shy of six, right?
Yeah. The Note 7 was 5.7. The S7 was 5.5, I think. It's right. Really small difference.
With a stylus?
It's
that's the issue?
It doesn't have a stylus. It has a curved screen, though. It looks like a little Note 7.
Mm-hmm. So which is there another Android phone with a stylus that's worth looking at? Anyone?
There is another one, and I'm trying to remember. It's not. I don't know if it's worth looking at. I think LG makes one with a stylus.
Oh, look. Oh, LG Style 2 has the same screen size. Oh.
Yeah. Is this, what's it called? The Stylus 2? Yeah, that looks like it.
Yeah.
5.7 inches, 13 megapixels, 3,000 milliamp hour battery. Just came out in June. Comes with a stylus. You know what? That's the one to get.
It's a red screen, though, I think, right?
It's OLED, yeah. Well, no, IPS, sorry. It's an LCD screen.
But it says 720 by 1290, but I think the Note 7 was higher res than that.
Yeah, but this is still pretty high.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
She won't notice that difference, especially that, you know.
Unless you're strapping it to your face, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
That's one to look at.
Yeah.
That's one to look at.
Okay, I'm going to move this umbrella so that I...
Okay, move your umbrella. While you're moving your umbrella, I'll talk about our doorbell. And we will continue on. I have to... Oh, yeah, you could get an older Note. Actually, that's a good point. Get the Note 5. I love the Note 5.
Okay. But how long is that going to be supported?
Oh, I don't know. It's yeah. not... Oh, I don't know. You know, I have a Note 5 lying around. I could send it to you.
No.
The Note 5 was beautiful. I liked the Note 5 a lot. Stylus. That's the one where if you put the stylus in wrong, it... Broken.
It snapped.
The one that you would get would be one with a broken.
I still think we need Note 7. I like that size. I mean, I know I'm the.
No, I bought every Note since the Note 1. And I was mocked when I first got the Note. People thought, what's that big thing? What is that slab of meat you're holding? And I loved it. And I always loved it. In fact, I loved the Note 7. And I wept. Well, I didn't really weep.
But that's what I'm saying. But
the Nexus 7, when I brought it
back. Nexus 7 is the next size up. It is 7 inches. It's 2 inches bigger. It's a great thing to use, particularly if you've got, poor vision. But it's the same. It's basically the same size as a paperback book and weighs less. So
which one is this?
The Nexus 7, the discontinued one. The dead one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish Google would bring that back. I love that. That was an actual 7-inch screen.
Mm-hmm. Especially at that price point. You know, that was.
It was $239 or something.
Yeah. So it's like, why has that niche gone away? That was a lovely device.
Well, I think Samsung's and others still make 7-inch tablets. I have I use my 7 all the time in my studio. I put it's a dedicated, I have a little Android app on it that I use for timing my radio show on a big screen. I love it. It's running fine. But it will never be nougat, as you say.
Right.
No nougat for you, ga. Our show today brought to you by the Ring Video Doorbell. Love my Ring. Here's the thing. This is a doorbell that ties into your Wi-Fi. Stacy is big in the Internet of Things. This is my favorite Internet. In fact, to be honest, I have a lot of Internet of Things I don't use. This one I use every day. It replaced my doorbell. So I unscrewed the doorbell, two screws, two little wires coming out of the jam. This is actually a much nicer installation, and everything you need comes with the Ring Video Doorbell. The screwdriver, the drill bit, if you needed one, which you won't, and all the other doohickeys. Whoops. Even a level. This is the level. So it comes out beautiful. And it's actually a nicer installation than my original because it has this back plate that you trim the wires through and connect them to the terminal. And then this is the cool thing. This is the Ring Video Doorbell. By the way, this is the original 720p and it has a year-long lithium ion battery. So you can use this on an unwired doorbell, as an unwired doorbell. But if you have a wired doorbell, you might want to look at the new Ring Pro, which is slimmer, smaller, doesn't have the battery, and has a 1080p camera. This is a very wide-angle camera. So when you tie it into your Wi-Fi, you can see who's ringing your doorbell. You can even – it's got motion detector too. So you can see if somebody comes up your steps, you're up your walk, and you can set the sensitivity. So it's really nice. You can set the range, what it's looking at and how close. It also has a speaker and a microphone. So as somebody comes up at your steps, you can say, I see you. This will be great for Halloween. You will have so much fun with this. It also scares away bad guys because they often come up to ring the doorbell to see if you're home before they burglarize your house. It will also allow you to tell package delivery people hey, just leave it on the porch there. I'll be right out. Thank you. And keep an eye on that package. And the beauty is you don't have to be home. You could be anywhere in the world as long as you can get online. The app is for iOS and Android. They have a Mac app as well. I think there's a new Windows app too. So you can, I can even see previous videos. So when the dogs, you know, when we were on vacation, we're in Russia. I can see if the dog sitter actually came, as she said she would, to pick up Ozzy, you know, and what time she came. I can. It's almost like a log of everybody who came and went with video. Now, they've got a bunch of kits now on the site at ring.com/twig, ring.com/TWIG. They call them the Ring of Security Kits, and you can get a great big discount depending on the kit you want. They also have... Besides the doorbell, they have the stick-up cam, which is a Ring video doorbell minus the doorbell. So it still has the camera, microphone, speaker. And you get the little solar panel. You don't even need to give it power. You can put it anywhere. So now you can extend the area that you're keeping an eye on. With any Ring of Security kit, you also get their great little illuminated solar-powered security sign, which deters intruders even before they walk up your path there. They also offer the chime. I should mention that. So if you are doing the, you know, the unwired doorbell thing, the chime, you plug it in anywhere, it's also connected to your Wi-Fi. It rings when somebody presses the doorbell button. So it's an additional ding-donger for your doorbell. And up to $150 off, depending on which kit you select. The Ring of Security Kits at ring.com/twig. Join the million. This is really one of the most successful Internet of Things devices ever. Join the millions of homeowners who are now protecting their home with a Ring, including me. For a limited time, you can get $150 off one of those Ring of Security kits. Ring.com/twig. Ring.com/twig. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. What do you think, actually, Stacey, is the most is it the Nest, the most widely used IoT device? What do you think?
Sonos.
That's not an IoT device. Is it?
It's an internet connected speaker.
I guess it is. Yes. Yeah. All right. I guess you're right.
Nest, yeah. Echo. If they sold 3 million, nobody knows how many Nest has sold.
How many? I mean, how many Echoes? Millions. Echoes was in the millions too, right?
3 million is the best guesstimate.
Oh, that must be the best selling then. Yeah. That's so, kind of amazing.
Well, I don't know how many Philips, like, Hue bulbs have sold. I feel like there's got to be, like, a million of those out there,
no,
right?
No, I don't think so. That's a specialty product. Who wants colored lights?
Well, they have connected lights that aren't colored. And then, oh, no, look at things like Tile. Tile's $40 million in revenue, which means they've sold millions of connected Bluetooth trackers.
The tracker says they've sold 1.5 million.
Okay, well.
Okay.
So, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Has Ring ever said how many doorbells they've sold? It's a lot more expensive than the tracker's $30, so it's a lot more expensive.
I don't think Jamie said how many they've sold. They're definitely the number one in that category.
Oh, they own the doorbell category, yeah.
Yeah, they own doorbells.
Yeah, they own the doorbell, man.
They own it for consumer now, and I don't know if I get in trouble for saying this, but there are other doorbells that are nicer. Or nice, that are sold not direct to consumer.
What do you mean? Like sold to who?
My favorite of all video doorbells, and you got to tell me if I'm getting in trouble here, is the Vivint video doorbell.
No, you can have
doorbell.
Whatever opinion you want. Vivent?
Vivint, Vivint. But they are a security company, and you pay them monthly.
Oh, it's
but
a security doorbell? System, and then you pay a monthly fee. And
I wish I knew who manufactured that doorbell, because it is... They have buffering. None of the other doorbell companies offer this, but it's when the doorbell rings or when it detects motion, it pulls the last 3 seconds before the actual motion
like
or doorbell.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's clever.
It is.
Well, wait a minute, though. The Ring would do that because it detected the motion. So it, as soon as somebody comes up your walk, they're recording.
Right. Depending on how you have your.
I guess somebody could do a Tom Cruise.
sidle through.
But I can, when I look at my Ring, most of it is motion. Most of it's people walking by or cars pulling up and stuff like that. And only a few of them are actual rings. Because you get everything that's moving around there if you turn that on, which I did.
I have the stick up cam that's in my backyard. I just got an email today saying I need to recharge the battery, and it's been up for 2 months.
Oh, that's good. So you didn't get the solar panel for that.
I have the solar panel, but I was curious how long the battery would last because everyone's going to get the solar.
You're doing research. Good for you.
That's my informed opinion.
So are you going to watch the election on Twitter? Or are you going to watch it on TV?
Debate or the
election. The election's coming up, you know, November 28th. All you Trump voters, get on out there.
If I watch anything, it'll be on Twitter, but I probably won't watch the video of it live.
BuzzFeed's teaming up with Twitter on election night.
Election night as well, okay.
Yeah. And now that's interesting because didn't they have the Bloomberg stream?
They had the Bloomberg stream for the debates. Yeah.
So maybe they're okay. So I guess.
And also their tech news stream. That was the other thing we saw popping up this time last week.
That's right. Oh yeah, that's right. So so that deal is over. So now it's going to be BuzzFeed. Interesting.
Huh.
BuzzFeed and Twitter. It's, you know, Twitter, it's, so the sale is, I don't know what, it's up in the air because everybody who was interested has now dropped out. And
Twitter
yet,
is the Donald Trump of tech companies.
Well, but, and yet, this is when they're shining, right, is during these kind of political events like the debates, and then election night, this is where Twitter really shines.
So that was the, you know, this is what we were saying last week is, the value is that they give context to live events and they amplify memes. So it is often better to actually just watch Twitter than watch the TV to get interpretation of what's going on. Because if you've got a sensible number of people you're following, or if you just watch the trending stuff, you will pick up what's a summary of what's happening, right, along with the jokes and things about it too. And that is their big advantage. That is the thing they have that Facebook doesn't have and Google doesn't have. So if anyone was going to buy Twitter, as I said before, it would be YouTube because the correlation with live video makes sense.
It is a media company, isn't it?
The other one that somebody proposed last week was Bloomberg could actually buy it. And that would fit both those criteria. The criteria of needs to be a Wall Street person who would impose financial discipline that everyone was talking about, but also is... all about real-time information and media. And it could be because the Bloomberg terminals, the real information.
That's an interesting time.
So that was one that's like, I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah.
And so the partnership with Bloomberg TV was an interesting marker there. Yeah. So that, I'm not sure if Bloomberg's interested or wants to take that on, but that was like a, they could probably afford it, or at least they could raise the money to do it. And they would fit in with a big chunk of their core business, which is making sense of the world in real time.
Right.
So that was one that sort of makes more sense than Disney, say. And I still think YouTube is another natural correlate, but the challenge there is fitting the two companies together.
Twitter has also turned on live streaming via Periscope, and more than just streaming from your phone. They want to get the pros involved because you could stream from a lot of professional gear.
Well, you could do that. Plug in.
We could do it. We could plug our...
You got a feed you could send into that, I assume.
Yeah. I actually don't know if they support our streamer, which is the Elemental, but if they didn't, they sure should, because that's a very popular one. Or take it straight out of the TriCaster. That's really... for somebody like... for a company like ours... It's really interesting, all the different ways we could get to people. And that, you know,
yeah.
After I said all those bad things about Twitter, that would be very interesting, wouldn't it?
There you go. Well, that's the thing. The compelling thing is you're watching the video and you're commenting it and seeing the responses in real time on your phone. At the moment, you do that by watching the TV and using your phone, watching TV, using your computer, whatever. But bringing it into the app makes a certain amount of sense. It doesn't necessarily mean that would be the only way you watched it. But it would mean you could carry on watching things when you're in those multiple contexts. And so that made sense for the football game stuff. It makes sense for the political stuff.
aid worker.
Here's the BBC World Service on overwhelmed Periscope.
Described the conditions as the worst he had seen.
Now, this is a radio feed, right? This is an audio-only feed, but they're showing, they're doing video as well as audio. Isn't that interesting? I mean, that's kind of what we do, isn't it?
Spokesman for what used to be known
as the front said it would stay and conference when Bob Lord, who's in charge of security at Yahoo, was speaking. And my plan was actually to Periscope his talk because they weren't live streaming it. And then people could actually talk and comment on it. I don't know. I think Twitter is sitting on so much information.
You've really, not just information. I think that they, if they could just figure it out, that they're sitting on something very interesting. But so is Facebook, right? It's a race between Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube.
It is, but the piece that Twitter does have is the sort of live contextualization.
And the interactivity, the built-in interactivity.
The ability to have the conversation about it. Yeah. And they are better at that than anyone else. And it was the thing that I realized a few years ago when the Royal Wedding was on. I was like, the Royal Wedding's on, why would I watch that? And I was like, I'll watch that live because British Twitter will be really funny while the Royal Wedding is on.
Especially,
and it was.
Especially, what do they call those hats? The attractors, the...
The fascinators,
yes. and it was. I was sitting there watching it with, you know, the family stayed up because it was a royal occasion and we had a drink and had a laugh. And they were like, why are you laughing so much? I said, I'm looking at my phone and reading the funniest people in Britain mock this occasion. And
but what, it is that what a valuable expression. Thing. If you can take something that no one would watch otherwise, right. And by adding your secret sauce all over it, make it compelling...
Sharknado. Right. Do you remember Sharknado? Yeah. Was it 2 or 3? I mean, hate watching that for,
In some respects, it makes more sense. It doesn't mesh well with network television because in the US, you've got 3 time zones. So 2/3 of the country is going, no, spoilers, don't tweet about it. And you know, when they do The Voice or The American Idol, they vote, they're basically saying East Coast vote, West Coast you know, if you can vote, but that means you will be able to, you'll spoil the show for yourself. So making it sort of a parallel, naturally live thing like that makes more sense. But in a country that has a more unitary time zone like the UK or France or Japan, having that everyone's watching the same thing at once makes a lot more sense. And so there's a sort of natural correlation. As I follow enough British people on Twitter that I get a sense of what's on TV in the UK by what people are mocking.
Or when the Great British Bake Off has drama. Good Lord.
Oh, I just read an article in the New York Times that said the Great British Bake Off is bringing baking back to Britain.
This cake isn't spongy enough.
Do you watch it?
I've watched one because everyone was so excited about it. And I was like, no.
No? Well, the problem I'd have with it would make me want to eat sweet treats.
Not those sweet treats. Good Lord.
Oh, really?
They're mostly good. I mean,
you're British. You're not. You're not allowed to have an opinion.
They do French things and other things as well. They have a different challenge.
They're mostly like angel or spongy cakes that aren't really cake consistency with like cream or fruit jams and weird. I don't. It's not. Acceptable.
How do you watch it? Do you watch it on BBC America?
Netflix.
Oh.
Yeah, Netflix.
I guess I'll be watching.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of fondant involved?
It's on PBS now as well, I think, but they're a season behind.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Great. I don't know if they do. I don't think they have a lot of fondant or whatever in British baking.
No, it depends.
The show was not their focus.
It was sponge cakes. Sponge cakes are famous.
But each week is themed. So each week they have to do a certain class of things. So there'll be a bread week and there'll be a patisserie week and there'll be a iced fondant.
How about pesto and sun-dried tomato palmiers? Or Savarin with Chantilly cream. Here's chocolate and coffee fondant fancies.
Oh, there you go.
That's
and
disgusting.
A fancy is a thing, right? Isn't that like a descriptive thing?
What is a fancy? Yes. It looks like a...
It's a small cake. It's like a petit four, but sweet.
Here in America, we have cake pops. Fairy cake.
Fairy cake is what you call a cupcake, only not quite so big.
Okay.
Oh, I want a fairy cake.
All right. I don't know how we got.
We've turned into the Pinterest of podcasts.
The show has gone off the rails.
Off the rails.
But the point about Bake Off is that it does have all these people commenting along with it and enjoying it. I could tell it was on this afternoon this evening in the UK, because I could see all this stuff going across the stream. And I'm like, oh, right, there's a new episode out tonight, because everyone's grumbling about Paul Hollywood flirting with the bakers and things.
150-page report released Tuesday by the Center for Privacy and Technology at Georgetown University Law School found the FBI databases, facial recognition databases, have 117 million Americans, about half of all adults. That means half of all of you are in this database, and very few oversights or limitations on how it's used, how it's searched, who looks through it. Is that a problem, or does it just make police better? Police say it helps us. We don't have to do racial profiling because the computer doesn't know. Well, part of the reason you're in this is because your driver's license, right?
I was about to say your computer is trained in a different way. But did you see, so tie that information to the Verge's story about Baltimore police feeding their database into social media companies like Instagram and Facebook to get actual identities. And suddenly, you see that? Did you pull up the link for that?
I will. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram sent feeds that help police track minorities in Ferguson and Baltimore.
Oh.
Yikes.
So,
I mean, and the companies were just exposing their APIs, and the other, this specialist.
This company was Geofedia, a Chicago-based company that says it analyzes. It takes the data via API without, it doesn't go to Facebook and say, hey, can we just socially profile your... It just takes the feed and then analyzes the post to deliver real-time surveillance information for 500 law enforcement agencies so they can track and respond to crime. I don't get it. What, are you going to tweet, hey, I just robbed that lady down the street?
Some people do that.
What?
Yes. There are people who would put that on Facebook.
So I'm all for this, because this is going to eliminate the stupid criminal from the gene pool.
Yeah, but then you're selecting for smarter criminals. This is
you're right.
They can't get
That's like only
doorbell.
Taking half the penicillin. Oh my God! I never thought of it that way.
But it's that's when I saw the cops have 117 million faces. My first thought was like, I bet Mark Zuckerberg is saying, "Is that all?"
Yeah, yeah. Why isn't everybody in there?
Well, there's a lot of young people who haven't taken driver's license photos. How many states don't have? There's only a certain percentage of the states that actually feed.
Do you have a picture on your Texas driver's license?
Texas is one of the states that do feed into this. I'm totally in this database.
Yeah. Well, if you don't do anything wrong, you have nothing to fear. Or if you don't do anything wrong and you don't tweet about it, you have nothing to fear.
Or post it to...
What if I buy a burner phone with cash?
Or you've been watching something. The Wired. The Wire. The Wired is different. How about this one? Joe Biden says, we're going to get them, Ruskies. The CIA, according to the vice president, is preparing for a major retaliation against Russia for hacking the DNC.
Why would you say that?
Joe, why would you say that? So the director of national intelligence, one of our favorite admirals, James R. Clapper, the guy who said, no, we're not spying on any Americans, no, issued a statement that pointed his finger at Russia for attempting to interfere with the 2016 election. The leaks, he said, are consistent with the methods and motivations of Russian-directed efforts. President Putin says that's a political ploy. And then Biden on one of the Sunday shows, Meet the Press, said, yeah, we're going to retaliate proportionately. Actually, they did just arrest this morning or yesterday a guy they think might be Guccifer too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wait. Didn't he already get arrested?
Guccifer 1. You're thinking of Guccifer 1.
Oh, okay. Like, wait a second.
Gucci for Two is the follow-on for Gucci for One. Let me see if I can find that story. But because they did just arrest... you got it? There you go. Russian hacker wanted by FBI is arrested in Prague. We don't know if it's Guccifer, but they think, according to this story in the New York Times, that it might be somebody involved in the hacking of the DNC.
Okay.
I'm like, I
don't know what to say other than, yes, we have to believe that Russia's hacking the DNC.
I believe it. The man did not resist arrest. He was captured and raided a hotel in central Prague. Actually, it's only been announced yesterday. He was captured a week ago, October 5th, about 12 hours after authorities heard he was in the country where he drove around in a luxury car with his girlfriend. He must have had, their face must have been in the database.
There you go.
Man was a Russian citizen suspected of hacking attacks on targets in the United States. The arrest was conducted in collaboration with the FBI after Interpol issued an arrest warrant. They think maybe this is the guy who hacked LinkedIn.
Oh.
And the arrest occurred 2 days before the Obama administration said, we now know it was the Russian government who hacked us. So I don't know if these are connected. Here it is. Law enforcement officials in Washington, speaking on condition of an anonymity, said that the suspect did not appear to be related to the hacking of the Democrats' emails or to organizations like DC Leaks or WikiLeaks. Meanwhile, Julian Assange has lost his internet access.
And
the Ecuadorian embassy. The Ecuadorians say we didn't want him to interfere with the U.S. election. Not that Julian was releasing emails from his, little apartment there. I don't know.
Maybe he was. He was pretty sheltered to something, you know.
Yeah, maybe.
And doesn't he do, what are those called? They're not webinars when Julian Assange does them.
Just little talks?
He Snowden, and so they appear at...
Oh, they appear as robots or whatever, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if he was doing anything
does
like that.
Does he do telepresence robots? Does he move around on the stage like Snowden does?
Yeah.
Hey, I got to praise Larry Lessig. Everybody loves Larry Lessig.
Oh, yes.
He's been on sabbatical. He's been in Iceland. I think he was on his way. He says, I'm on my way from Iceland to my parents to see my dad, who's not doing well. Posted this on his blog, lessig.tumblr.com. Landing in JFK, I found my inbox flooded with questions from one of the leaked Podesta emails. This is an email exchange between John Podesta, chairman of the Clinton campaign, and a woman named Neera Tanden. Neera writes about Lessig, I effing hate that guy. Like, I'd like to kick the poop out of him on Twitter, but I know that's dumb. That was in response to Podesta saying, an everyday American pompous law professor, the smugness of Larry Lessig. Now, if I were Larry, my feelings might be a little hurt, although apparently he knows Neera. And here's his very lovely response. I'm a big believer in leaks for the public interest. That's why I support Snowden and why I believe the president should pardon him. But Lessig writes, I can't for the life of me see the public good in a leak like this, at least one that reveals no crime or violation of any important public policy. We all deserve privacy. The burdens of public service are insane enough without the perpetual threat that every thought shared with a friend becomes Twitter fodder. Neera has only ever served in the public and public interest sector. Her work has always and only been devoted to advancing her vision of the public good. It is not right that she should bear the burden of this sort of breach. Not only is he not publicly offended, but he's publicly defending her and spanking WikiLeaks.
And indeed you for reading it out, yes.
Oh, yeah, I guess I shouldn't. Well, he posted it on his blog. He's not suppressing it. That's a good point. But I thought that was, what a gentleman. And, of course, we love Larry Lessig.
And it was very clear that they locked him out of the debates on very spurious grounds early on.
Yeah. Yeah, because he was running for president. He had a very interesting plan. He says, there's no way anything can happen until we get rid of this crappy system of campaign financing. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get a great vice president. He'll be huge. He'll be great. He'll be the best ever. And then, because no one who actually is running for office will ever get rid of the way campaigns are financed. That's how it, you know, it's self-reinforcing. So I will win. I will eliminate. I will institute public funding of campaigns and eliminate private funding of campaigns, fix this whole mess, then resign so this other guy can be president, which I thought was an interesting point of view.
Right.
His candidacy ended almost before it began.
Well, but basically they changed the rules three times to stop him showing up in the primary debates.
Right.
And his point was to do that and then argue the others into supporting the policy, which probably Bernie would have done because it's the kind of thing. Right. He already had something like that in his platform.
Get it on the agenda, absolutely, yeah.
So that was the point of the thing. But also, to some extent, his point was sort of undermined by the way that the primaries went, which he didn't go with the money, which is also fascinating. In the Republican side, the three candidates with the most money got knocked out.
Right.
Interesting, yeah. Jeb Bush, yeah.
Yeah.
Has Elon Musk made his announcement? No, that's in an hour.
So. Is this the one where the Model 3s are deleted? No, that's on the site. Never mind.
There's supposedly some big announcement. Apparently, it's Model 3 Part 2. Don't know.
It's coming with a trailer.
Yeah.
That will ship in 2020.
2020. I don't know what.
Send your money now.
He says it's going to take things to another level.
He's going to build a second story. We have double-decker cars.
We should point out that Stacey and I both drive Teslas. So, okay? We like the guy. Let's wrap up with a fond farewell to Leo Baranek of Bolt, Baranek & Newman. He was an acoustics designer who, with BBN, basically designed the internet under government instruction, passed away at the age of 102. BBN was a really important Boston engineering company. In 1969, they won a contract from DARPANET to build the first computer-based network. It came to be called ARPANET. And from DARPA, they got from the Defense Department's Advanced Research Projects Agency.
Can I tell you that I've been watching The Americans, and the excitement in that show over the ARPANET is just awesome.
Yes.
They're like, the ARPANET, it's going to be big.
So The Americans takes place in the 60s?
1980. No, it takes place in the 80s.
In the 80s. But so it's a little, that's a little anachronistic, but okay.
No.
Did we call it ARPANET then?
There was the ARPANET, yes, because when did it become like the actual internet, not the browser? I know this is everybody's like big thing because everyone's like, oh, it's the 25th anniversary of the internet. No, that was last year.
That's the web.
No, I was, oh god, late 80s.
I think it was called the internet roughly that time as well.
Yeah, it's like mid 80s. It was still ARPANET and separate Janet and all the other things were connected together.
Okay And then the NSF controlled and ran it all, until the early 90s when they said, okay, do whatever you want.
Yeah.
National Science Foundation. Yeah. Anyway, Leroy Baranek of Bolt, Baranek & Newman. Did he see a world that changed from his birth in 1914 to his death this week?
Oof. That was amazing. The beginning of World War One, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
What a world.
Yeah, I also read a great essay about how the Soviet invented the internet and why it didn't work.
Why did it? Because they didn't have open standards.
Basically, it didn't work because they were too busy trying to keep it secret and infighting amongst bureaucrats.
Right.
So their one failed because they were behaving too like proprietorially and, you know, competing with one another. And the American one succeeded because they were behaving more socially and sharing with one another. So it's. But it's a great article. It's worth reading by Benjamin Peters, who's basically been researching, has written a book about it and has summarized his book into a very nice article. But there was basically a secret Soviet research program to try and build the sort of countrywide network.
Wow.
But it got squashed because the people running the different organizations didn't want the information to flow. They wanted to keep control.
In Soviet Russia, internet reads you.
And to some extent, you know, that applies to the British experiments with packet switching as well, because they were done under the auspices of the extension of the war program, which was very secretive. And so that was not recognized in the same way that ARPANET was, because ARPANET was done in public. So a lot of it is about actually publishing the protocols and the work you can use so other people can adopt it too. And that didn't happen with the Soviet one and with the other ones.
Is this a book, How Not to Network a Nation?
That's the book.
Benjamin Peters.
The thing I read was the article in Aeon, which I just chucked.
Oh, Aeon.
Stuck in the,
oh, yes.
You both are big Aeon fans. I got to start reading that.
That's good. That was good.
What is Aeon? I mean, I know it's Aeon.co. Was it a magazine?
It's a magazine, but don't they also, or am I thinking of Quanta that does the licenses, the articles out to other publications?
Aeon does too. There's a license. A republish this on the side thing there too.
Because they're a non-profit. The Soviet Internet, they called it.
That is a good title.
Internet is not good. Oh, I love it. I'm going to read this. It's by the guy who wrote the book, actually. Yeah.
It's a very good article. It's very well done and nicely edited and so on.
Aeon is very good. AEON.co. Very good stuff. And, boy, watch out. October 21st, if we can't reach an agreement, these guys are going on strike. Any guesses? These are the guys who voice video games. Unless an agreement is made this week between SAG and AFTRA and a coalition of video game companies. By the way, I'm a SAG-AFTRA member, disclaimer here. So if they go out on October 21st, I'm going to have to stop working.
On video games? Or still working at all?
Well, I got to support them. I can't cross my own picket line.
So you have to stop playing video games.
That's it. I'll stop playing video games.
I'll be blacklegging, yeah.
By the way, they earn more than $100 an hour plus benefits, and that's the minimum. Many make much, much more money. In fact,
do they get residuals?
Some do.
Is that what the argument's about?
If you're a really good voiceover actor.
Depends what you
can
negotiate.
Did I see somewhere that Mark Zuckerberg is looking for a voice for Jarvis?
He is. Hello, Mark. What can I do for you today?
Leo, are you auditioning?
I would like to be your voice, Mark.
Maybe you'd prefer to have something silly. Hello, Mark.
I don't know. I'll do it whatever way you want it. Any way you want it.
Someone put in the chat room, and it's worth maybe saying.
Yes.
David, is it? I don't know how to say his last name, but the founder of PC World, Macworld,
David Bunnell. This is a great article by our friend Harry McCracken. I don't know when Bunnell passed. He passed sometime.
Tuesday night.
Oh, well, then that is a big deal. David is well known by anybody who's ever read a magazine. He was the founder of PC Magazine, PC World, and Macworld, and a really great guy. And everybody who's worked in this business as a tech journalist, if I never met the man, but everybody who's worked in the business certainly knew of him. He edited, starting in 1975, Mitz Altair's newsletter about their computer notes, which is probably the first personal computer magazine. Started Personal Computing, wonderful magazine, co-founded PC Magazine and PC World, which were at each other's throats for many years during the 80s and 90s. And then Macworld, Harry wrote a very nice tribute to David Bunnell, who passed at the age of 69 on Tuesday. And of course, Harry knew him very well. He worked at PC World for 13 years. Kind of a legend in the business.
So one more thing for me to throw in was the article I wrote. This was published today about how the web became unreadable.
And how did it become unreadable?
It's a long story, but basically there's a whole series of choices that designers made. You can actually see it on that page there. The type at the top is illegible because it's so gray. There's been this trend to make type grayer and grayer.
Thinner
and thinner. So my theory on that is that it started when we went from CRTs to LCDs, suddenly, and with Microsoft ClearType, suddenly instead of being fuzzy around the edges, all the pixels were actually squares. And also with the clear type and the subpixel rendering, it went to much crisper letters. And so the designers was saying, like, everything just suddenly got sharper. That's, I want to soften that a bit. And at that point, they started switching to using slightly less, you know, less black on white and more gray on white or gray on gray.
This is my favorite passage. Apple's typography guidelines suggest that developers aim for a 7-to-1 contrast ratio, but they state it in their on their website in text that's 5.5-to-1.
Yep.
Yep.
Google too. Google say 7-to-1, and then they have it 4.6-to-1.
Because you see a lot of great text. It's low contrast, I guess. Yeah.
So it's a collection of things. There was that initial thing where people started using grays a lot, and then that just became the default. There was Apple pushing very hard for the very thin fonts, which makes it even worse. Mm-hmm. So when they went to Helvetica Neue Light as the system font, suddenly everything went down in contrast enormously. But I think a big part of it is that designers and software engineers who are building these things are sitting in well-lit offices with very big, bright screens and have a huge amount of contrast headroom. Whereas when you're sitting outside looking at your phone, so much more of that contrast has gone away from the illumination and the environment that you're in.
Right.
And so there is... It's a sort of failure to model what people are seeing. And also part of it is that anyone who's working graphic design tends to have extremely good eyesight.
Right. And also it's true that black on white is so contrasty that it actually to me, it's a little painful almost, right?
But that says to me is you should turn the brightness of your screen down.
Oh, I never thought of that.
The point is that an office screen, you are sitting there staring into a light bulb. Those things are, you know, 100 watts.
Right.
The background illuminant is very strong. And the laptops, they have ambient light sensors. The desktop things don't.
Right.
So a lot of people are staring to two bright screens, and they sort of reflexively compensate in that way. So part of this would be go around and, A, put sort of a fill light behind your screen so that it's not the brightest thing in the room, but also turn down the brightness or adjust it across the day so that you're not sitting there peering into this giant glow, because then you subconsciously start doing it wrong.
When we redesigned our website, we got a lot of complaints from people who said, why did you use a white background? It's too bright, it's too bright, it's too bright. And I think you're right. But you can't really tell your users, oh, just turn your monitor down, you nitwit. Your white is too
bright. But that's part of the problem. Is that they've had to turn it up because all these other sites are using gray on gray.
Oh, just to read the gray.
Oh, you're like the equivalent of a loud commercial in the middle of a TV show.
Yeah. So we dyed, we get some tea and we dyed it all a little bit yellow.
Yeah, I'm happier with if you've got a brightness issue, turn down the white. Don't bring up the black to gray. Even if that's your issue, making the black sort of, 45% white doesn't actually help as much as turning the white down to a more neutral color. So that's... People look at this and say, I can reduce the contrast, and they do it the wrong way. And that's just this sort of weird fashion that we've got into. So I'm pushing back against that. But the other half of it is that the contrast ratios we use to measure are based on foreground color over background color with a modifier. But the point is, if you don't take into account the weight of the font, how wide the individual strokes are, then you're missing a lot of the actual contrast. And the standards, the accessibility standards we use, don't think about the font weight and font width at all. Or they talk about it in sort of, that's the example. It's like, these are both notionally the same contrast if you measure them by the ACAG thing, because that just specifies foreground to background color. But in practice, the one on the right is much dimmer because the font verticals and horizontals are much thinner. And that's part of the problem, is that we've now have more control over typography, but we're using it in silly ways. We're using it to make things too thin and less legible.
All right,
Kevin, I love
gentlemen.
That you exist.
I know. Isn't it great? Isn't it great?
I love it.
And designer's going to be grumpy with me for the rest of the week. But it's,
follow Kevin on Medium. Yeah, follow him on Medium. And by the way, indieweb.com now, right?
.org.
Oh, .org.
Somebody got the .com.
Damn
that. A while ago. It's an ISP that has gone out of business, I think.
IndieWeb is a people-focused alternative to the corporate web. Let's make the web the way it used to be. The content is yours. You're in control, and yet we're all talking with one another. It's a great site. And you guys have the Homebrew Website Club meetings on a regular basis. Next meeting's coming up tonight, Bellingham.
There's some tonight. You missed the ones in England and Germany. But
Portland, San Francisco, and Bellingham.
That's wrong. We need to fix that. It's not Portland, San Francisco tonight, but there are other ones going on. Portland, San Francisco are actually next week. We changed the homepage.
Very good. Stacey, what do you got for us as a pick of the week?
I have two things. Well, okay. Are you going to be mad at me for showing you two things?
No, the show is yours. Go for it.
All right, here we go. I've got to turn the light on. So this is the Hue Brighter Colors lamp. And this is always so fun to like do anything under like not duress. I'm like, what am I doing? I don't even know. I'm adding a room. You would think I would know how to do this. Okay, here we go. I am excited because I used to have, so the first initial Hues came out and they didn't do greens really well. So it didn't allow you to do beautiful turquoise colors like this. And here's my, see, I don't know if that comes out. This is hard.
The white balance fights with it and turns it down.
It does. Yes. I'm like, it's gonna perpetually. So you can kind of see it against my shirt, maybe. And so now you've got that. So this now makes the Hue light bulbs as good as the LifeX bulbs, in my opinion, unless you like really hate hubs, like Kevin Toefel hates hubs. So these new, they're even richer colors on these new Hue bulbs. This was kind of what you look for on the box. But this has like convinced me to go all in on Hue because now I finally have this beautiful color that I love. So that's one. Two is my recipe. So I put a video there. This is not the best shot video. It is not like super impressive, especially compared to like that dude who did the Time Warp song on his garage.
What?
I don't know. Okay, so these are my Halloween lights. And so my recipe is basically, how do I automate my lights? That was it.
It was short. It was short, but sweet. But
the whole goal here is before Christmas, I wanted to tell people how I'm doing this,
right,
so they could be like, boom, these are the things I need.
So what is the command?
Turn on Halloween.
Oh, turn on Halloween.
Turn on Halloween. So
I got
there's
it.
A couple things here. There, from what you're seeing in the front, there are two GE outdoor Z-Wave modules that you can buy. You can also use iDevices if you're a HomeKit person. iDevices makes an outdoor module, but that's like $75.
And it's just waterproof, right? That's the point.
Yeah, it's just, it's IP65 or something rated. And the GE ones are $35. And I have a lot of them, so I went with GE. If you do the GE, you're going to need a hub that speaks Z-Wave, though. So then I use the Wink Hub for mine. You could use SmartThings. And you basically, what else am I thinking? You connect those to the hub, and then the hub talks to the Echo. So I set a schedule on Wink, and then I also did the Echo. And so I say, Echo, turn on Halloween and turn off Halloween, and it's done. And
it obviously could be more elaborate. This is just a proof of concept.
Well, it's actually, okay, guys, it's my actual Halloween lighting.
Well, it's Halloween. You don't got to go crazy in Halloween.
Christmas, I have 9 different connected outlets plus some music.
Wow.
And
you do, really?
Yeah, because I love Christmas.
Well, I love Halloween too, but I think Christmas you should definitely go all out. I want to see this now.
Yeah, well, Christmas, so it's like I have lights on my banisters, you know, and then the Christmas tree gets its own stuff. Right, and then there's the outdoor lights.
So some of it's indoors, some of it's outdoors. All right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a professional lighting designer. And if anyone's really, you got to see the guy who did the Time Warp thing on his garage, because you will feel like, oh, Stacey, why did you even show me yours? Yours sucks. It is really fantastic. He does stadium lighting. So
is this it?
Let's see. Oh yeah. This guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Did you get both in, Stacey? You didn't. So I shouldn't do a, I shouldn't wrap it up yet. You did? All right.
I did.
This would be a good time then. Oh man. To say thank you for joining us in This Week in Google. We do the show every Wednesday at 1:30 p.m. Pacific, 4:30 Eastern. 2030 UTC. Thanks to Stacey Higginbotham. You'll find her at StaceyOnIoT.com. Giga Stacey on Twitter, where she tweets all sorts of stuff. And thanks to Kevin Marks, IndieWeb.org. We'll see y'all next time on Twig. That's crazy.